Hello, and good evening, everyone. Thank you all for joining me. And so I would just like to welcome any questions that anyone has. I do have just a list of emails, and I can go through those in a little bit here. But if there's something on your mind and you're feeling like you're wanting to connect or to investigate it more deeply, please bring it forward. And that's one of the reasons we're meeting here, is so that we can come together in this space of truth, this space of investigation. Because oftentimes the truth is not clear to us. But sometimes even the very act of formulating a question helps bring things into the truth, helps bring a sense of clarity. So many of us, we're so accustomed to reading things in books or listening to teachers speak. We are very accustomed to being told the truth. But the art of inquiry, the art of contemplation, I value it just as much as the art of meditation. It's a willingness to look at something directly, something that feels out of alignment, something that feels confused, or something we struggle with, and look at it and see. What is this? What is this about? Why is this happening in my life? Why am I in this situation? Or why am I in this situation again? When we contemplate something, we are not looking for the quick answer. We're choosing to be quiet, to be still. And we're willing to look where we haven't looked before. We're willing to listen to where we haven't listened before. It requires that we are willing to walk into the unknown and see, is there something here? Is there something I'm missing? Is there some truth that's right here. It wants to reveal itself to me, but I'm busy listening to a different aspect of my mind. Oftentimes we listen to the loudest voice within us. Instead of listening to the quietest voice, we listen to the loudest voice. The voice of our egoic nature, which is oftentimes arguing or fighting. Or sometimes our habitual nature, it's just habitual. It's so habitual we don't even see. We don't even see what's happening. I had this funny experience on Friday night. I was driving down the mountain from my home towards town, and just this intuition came and arose within me. Go visit a friend, on my way down the hill. And I pulled into his driveway. And his dog was barking at me. I honked the horn a couple times because he lives out in the country and I wanted to let him know it was me coming. I didn't want to scare him by just showing up unannounced. And I walked up to the door and I looked inside. And he was half asleep. with a glass of, like a half glass of wine in his hand. The TV was on. I knocked on the door and he looked over at me almost as if I was a ghost. And so I just walked in. It was quite funny to me, how, in a humorous way, to see my friend, what bad shape he was in. On the TV was one of those reality TV shows, the worst kind too. It was, I think the show was Honey Boo Boo, if any of you know that. And I looked at him, and in the most happy, joking kind of way, I said, "What the hell's the matter with you? What the hell's the matter?" Because he just looked so bad. I don't even think he was watching the TV, but he was so lost in his own pain. And he had gotten in the habit of just being lost, of not even knowing what was on the TV screen. Not even knowing what's happening. Not even knowing that his body was tired and needed to be asleep. Not even knowing that instead of drinking a glass of wine, that he probably just needed some rest. He needed to learn to self-soothe. And of course, this is an old friend of mine, so I can harass him a little bit and say, "What the hell is the matter with you?" And of course, I say it with a smile. And sometimes I say things that are shocking to people. The shock is meant to, it's meant to wake them up, almost to startle them, out of the delusion that they're in. And he looked at me, and he just went on and on about, all the terrible things that were happening in his life. He was once a multi-millionaire. He once had millions and millions of dollars. He once had a beautiful wife and an incredible business. And he pretty much lost it all. We joke sometimes when I talk to her. I said, "You could write a book about all the pain you've been through." He used to make millions and millions of dollars each year. He had a real estate company and an incredible like photography company where he'd travel around the world taking pictures. He was surrounded by beautiful people and had many assistants, and he had a great mansion and Telluride with huge mountain views. And back in 2008, the economy crashed, and after that, it was one thing after the next. His wife got cancer, and it wasn't even that that she died from the cancer. Well, she ended up leaving him, just because I think it was so difficult for just the stress of going from having so much to having nothing, and being homeless and bouncing from house to house. And here he was, just in utter despair, deep in the despair, deeply struggling. And it was almost as if some part of him had accepted the despair. And by accepted it, I don't mean in the healthy way of acceptance. I meant he fell into it. He allowed it to swallow him up. He was lost in this habit. He gave up even searching. Searching for a way out. But instead, he took on the a different habit. Or another habit, rather, the habit of complaining. So instead of deeply contemplating what went wrong or what he could do to respond to his situation, he let despondency take over. And I don't even think he knew it had taken over. He fell into this place of just losing total faith, total hope. And so many of us have had some level of difficulty in life, some level of trauma, some level of the rug being pulled out from under us. And when we have an experience like this, we must be willing to have hope, willing to have faith, willing to have the courage to look at our lives, to look at our relationship with our minds, our relationship with our emotions, to look at our relationship with God. And see, is there anything here? Anything here I need to be doing differently? Now, each morning when I get up, I start my day with this prayer. Lord, will you lead me? Will you guide me? Will you come into my heart? Will you show me the way forward? Will you lead me? Will you guide me? Will you show me the way forward? And then throughout the day, I listen. I'm open, I'm receptive to God's grace, to God's teaching. And God speaks to us. Millions of times. Millions of times each year. Little whispers, little nudges, flows of energy this way and that way. But in order to listen in this way, we have to have a contemplative, what I call a contemplative mind. A willingness to be quiet, to be still, to listen. There must be a willingness not to just react to everything and be reactionary. But when we see pain, when we see suffering, when we see confusion, or even when we see a great opportunity, we must be willing to stop. And come into our heart and ask ourselves, how does my heart want to respond? What's the truth here? What's the truth here? How can I respond to this with love, with faith, with trust? How can I respond? How does truth wish to flow through me? How may I serve this situation? If any of us are in a tight spot, you'll notice your ego is barking at you, barking orders. Normally telling you exactly what we shouldn't do. Exactly what we shouldn't do. It's like we all have this old operating system within us. Our whole planet has it. This old operating system. A fight or flight response. Me against life. I'm a victim of life, whatever it is. And we must choose. We must choose what type of life, what kind of life we want to live. We are at a very crucial moment in history. Very crucial moment. When we can choose to be habitual and live life from the fight or flight response. If someone's mean to us, we're mean back. If someone's angry, we're angry back. Or we can choose to upgrade our operating system. We can choose to awaken into our heart. We can choose to be like Christ and say yes to love, even if it's difficult. Even if it's radically difficult. And so as I was speaking with my friend, and he was in such this difficult state, I even went up to him and slapped him on the back and kind of, you know, shook his shoulders a little bit, tried to shake his body. He's a pretty big guy. And I was literally trying to shake him out of it. You know, it was Friday night. I had a really long work week. But to be honest, I wasn't ready. I wasn't thinking that you know, I needed to be doing any counseling on, you know, 8 o'clock on a Friday night after a long work week. But see, my intuition brought me into this situation. And I was actually quite hungry. And there was part of me that just wanted to go. You know, the human part, the body part that was kind of saying, oh, I'm kind of hungry. I don't know if we have time for this. But, of course, my heart said, I'm going to stay here. I'm going to stay here with this friend of mine. And I'm going to love him. I'm going to listen to him. I'm going to honor his pain. I'm going to smile with him. Try to cheer him up. And see, when we listen to our heart doesn't always lead us into situations which are super comfortable. Our heart leads us with compassion. With compassion. And so, yes, it takes some courage. It takes some discipline here. If we truly want to awaken together, we must realize that awakening is not an individual thing. The law of oneness. States there is only one. There's only one. So if there's any aspect of ourself which is not awake, if there's any aspect of a friend who's struggling or who's in need, are we willing? Are we willing to sit with them? Are we willing to hold them? Are we willing to love them or love ourselves? Are we willing to shine the light of awareness into the dark places and say yes to love? For this is truly what contemplation is about. It's truly what the art of inquiry is about. Can we say yes? Yes to love. In every moment. And so if we're walking down the street or driving in our car or laying in our bed and our egoic nature is doing what egos do, which is normally say no. Egoic nature normally says no to love. It fights with life. So if we're laying in bed and we're arguing with someone who's not even present, we're arguing with our mother or father or sister or brother or whoever it is, can we let go of the argument, let go of the complaint? Can we step out of that dream? Sometimes the dream state, it involves an individual laying in bed, counting up, making a long list of all the people who've wronged them, why things aren't going our way, or complains this way or that way. And all that's required to step out of that dream. Is to see beyond the movement of thought. See beyond the commentary. See beyond it, and then ask. How could I love right now? Who needs love right now? If we are laying in bed making a list of all the people who've wronged us, there's a good chance that we need love. That our emotional nature needs love. And sometimes love means we breathe into the heart of darkness. We breathe into the pain. We breathe into the sadness, the grief. Sometimes it means we just admit out loud that, wow, sometimes life is really hard. Sometimes if we just validate our feelings, if we validate them fully. So I don't mean we're agreeing with the complaining and just going on and on and on, but sometimes we can stop complaining by just admitting out loud, like, wow, life is so hard. If we throw a wow in there, when we say that word wow, it has a humorous tone to it. We could almost laugh at our predicament. It shows us that we can see our predicament. And anything that we can see, it must mean there's space between us and it. And from this awareness, we can contemplate deeply. We can inquire into the situation. We can ask what needs to be done. Is there anything that needs to be done particularly? And if there is, by all means, please do it. If there's anything practical we can do to change our situation, yes. Yes, do what is practical. But sometimes life gives us things. Like sometimes people come to me and they say, Craig, I went to the school of hard knocks. And I laugh, and I say, oh, I think I know that school. I think we all know that school to some degree. We've gotten beat up by life. But see, if we're truly stepping into our spiritual nature, if we truly want to be awake, we have to look at our life with fresh eyes, awake eyes. We must resist the temptation to simply respond to pain by complaining, by arguing, by fighting. We must resist that. And ask, how can I respond with love right here, right now? How can I respond with love? What would love do? What would love do? Back in the, I think it was back in the early 90s, there was this question that a lot of the good Christians came up with. What would Jesus do? They'd wear these little, armbands or these little bracelets on their wrist and say, what would Jesus do? There's bumper stickers and all these kinds of things. And I think most people thought of this in terms of, kind of like a goody two shoes mentality, like a do-gooder mentality. And there's nothing wrong with that. That's a step forward. If our whole planet took on a do-gooder mentality, I think a lot would change. But this question of what would Christ do? How would he respond? If you look at his life, if you contemplate his life, he was an individual who was fiercely loving. He stayed in the truth no matter what. He stayed in love no matter what. Very people that betrayed him, he forgave them and loved them. I can remember in my life there was a time when one of my best friends deeply betrayed me. And he was lying to me, and even, I hate even to admit this out loud about him, but he was stealing from me. It was so tough. It was so tough for me because I was so shocked by what he was doing. I was so shocked that it was causing me anxiety. I was staying up late at night because I was so hurt and so shocked. And I can remember the moment when I had to sit down and I listened to him go on and on why he justified it and thought it was right. And at some point, I looked at him and I just said, just stop. Just stop. You know what you did and you knew it wasn't right. But I didn't say it from a place of anger. I didn't even say it from a place of anxiety. I said it to him from this place of love. And he looked at me. And he started to argue. And I said to him, "No, no, you don't understand. I'm not angry. Or rather, I'm not going to meet you from a place of anger. I'm not going to do that. I am hurt, though. I am hurt. But I'm not going to respond. I will not respond to you with anger. I will not react with anger. You are my friend, and I love you." And he was so confused by this that he just started arguing with me. I said, "Stop. Stop. You don't understand. I'm not angry with you. You are my friend, and I love you." And the part of me that was so utterly betrayed by him, and there was part of me that felt very righteous. That thought I should be, taking his face and putting it in the mud, you know. I said, "No, this is no way to live. He wronged me, and that was clear to me, it was clear to him. But what needs to happen now is we need to learn to love each other. We need to learn to walk forward in love." And so it took him about 20 minutes to realize that I wasn't going to argue. I think there was part of him that wanted me to argue because it would, give him a little bit of fuel on his fire for, thinking that I deserved, to be treated that. I just didn't go there. And finally he smiled. And he told me he was sorry and he wanted to make it right. I said, "Okay, good. Now we have something to talk about." But it took a willingness to stop. To stop the ego in its tracks. To see the argument as it arises in the space of awareness. To say, "No, I will not argue in this way. I will not fight with a friend. I will not fight with someone I love. I'm willing to say no to my own argument, even if it means the other person gets to think that they are right." I'm willing to be wrong. Wrong in the sense of that silly game of right and wrong that people play in a relative way. Does it really matter what our egoic nature is rambling on and on about? Or does it matter more to us what the truth is? We all have to make this choice in life. What is the truth? From which place within me am I going to live? Am I going to live from my God-given, awakened nature? Or am I going to live from my human nature that values being right over everything else? Or do I want to even go lower and live from my animal nature that's willing to punch someone in the face if they cut us off in traffic? From what place do we want to live if we truly want to awaken together? We have to be willing to live from love and truth. It must be an active choice in our everyday life, not just in our meditation routine in the morning. I laugh sometimes. People tell me, they say, "Craig, how much should I meditate?" They say, "I try to make time." Excuse me. They say, "I try to make time for 10 minutes of meditation a day." I say, "Oh boy, if our practice is only 10 minutes long, then we have a lot of, we have a lot of, the forces of ego, the forces of habit, the forces of samsara are against us. We must make our spiritual practice a spiritual life." When I was, however old I was, 18 or 19, and I met my teacher, I was very excited. I spent all my time with him. And my friends were going to wild parties and, chasing girls this way and that way. Drinking every night, because I was in college, or, smoking pot or whatever it is people do in college. And I had this choice. What kind of life do I want to live? What kind of life do you want to live? Are you living a life of truth? Oftentimes people think that means, oh, to be spiritual means to dress up in some silly costume with prayer beads and do this dance or that dance. But it's not about the costume we wear. It's about whether or not we are aligned with the truth of our heart. Whether or not we are listening to God as she gives birth in us and as us. Are we listening to her? Are we listening to our highest nature? Are we living from this place? How is it that we respond to our children, or our dog, or our neighbor, or the person broken down on the side of the road? How is it that we respond? This weekend I went out into the desert, out to Canyonlands National Park. Went out there with my 16-year-old daughter. She's getting ready to. She had a deep desire to go to boarding school, so she wrote herself a scholarship and to this school in Washington, D.C. It's just a semester-long school, but she had this deep desire to go, and so I said, "Oh, sweetheart, if you're going to leave your dad for the next 4 months, I want to spend a little time with you." So we went out into the desert together, and we got to the park entrance, and in my head I was having a little argument in my head, because I had read in one of our local papers that our fabulous president was going to raise the price of all the national parks to $100 admission. And so I had this little argument going on in my head, and starting to curse the president before I even pulled up to the booth where the park ranger checks you in and collects your money. And we rolled up to the booth, and there was nobody there. There was just a sign that said, basically everyone welcome, no fees, no cost. It wasn't anyone even working. It was amazing. It was a real, God was smiling at me. God was saying, "Here you are, Craig, living in samsara, arguing about something that's not even real in this moment. Cost of admission is free." We went into the park and there was no one there. It's like maybe 15 people in the whole park. Sometimes in the national parks in the summertime, there's 10,000 people there a day. But the park was empty. And we walked and climbed and scrambled. All the while opening our hearts to the hugeness of the sky, the vast, spacious innocence. If any of you have spent any time in Canyonlands, it's such a magical place. There's this absolute timeless eternity which is there. It's ever present. The silence is so huge, you almost feel like you're being squashed by the silence. And of course, I love this. I love this experience. It was funny too to watch my daughter because she's so accustomed to being connected, to her phone. But the beautiful thing I love about this park and this part of the country is there's no cell service there. Like none. And I was telling her, I said this funny thing to her. I said, "Amaya, when I come out here," Amaya is my daughter, I said, "I don't even worry because there's nothing I can worry about because my phone doesn't work. No one can even call me. Nothing can get me." And it's such a gift to give yourself the gift of silence. To open your heart to this incredible intimacy, this vast spaciousness. It's such a gift to allow your mind just to fall away. I think many of us in this day and age, we don't even know what it's like to be unreachable. And there was a time in my life when I was living under great stress, incredible stress. My phone was always ringing. I was always getting these messages of, a different one crisis after the next that I was expected to resolve or handle or argue with, one of those options. And I began to hear the sound of my phone, like the sound of it beeping for a text message. I used to hear that sound everywhere I was walking. And 90% of the time it was my phone. But there was 10% of the time when my mind was so on edge that I literally started to hear things. And at some point, I broke that habit by not keeping my phone on my body. Not keeping it on the body. Keep it away from me. It helps my mind to settle, to relax. If we're constantly hooked up to social media, if we're constantly hooked up to our phone and our computer, our egoic nature gets like on edge, waiting for the next notification, next text message, next this thing or that thing. Because our ego is always listening. But the way in which it listens for danger. That's how our egoic nature listens. It listens for danger. But the listening I was speaking about in the beginning, this profound, a profound sense of contemplation. It's a willingness to listen with our heart. Our heart isn't listening for the next text message. It's not listening for, the next whatever feed that comes through Facebook or Instagram or Twitter or whatever it is. Our heart listens for the presence of God. Our heart listens for the presence of truth. Our heart listens for the presence of light. I've had this interesting experience recently of hosting these little mini meditations in my office here in Durango. I've had a number of students come and visit from far away, and so I'll host a little meditation. And for the people coming in from out of town. And I notice as I sit, all these forces of light begin to flow through me and are transmitted into the room. But one of the shocking things to me is that many of the people who've come in, they've not noticed this. And they notice a little bit of light here and there and spaciousness and grace. But sometimes individuals will come and they'll just listen to their mind, they'll listen to their pain, they'll listen to their heartache. And that's okay, because that's part of meditation too, is listening to the parts of ourself which are struggling. I guess in the past when I've taught to bigger groups, not just, one or two or three people who are just meeting informally at my office, I look out in the room and I see, oh, there's others here that get this, that are open in the way that I'm pointing to. They're open in the space that I'm pointing to. I saw once someone who was trained, a highly trained Buddhist once came and he sat with my teacher. And he was trained to pay attention to the experience in the heaven world, what I call a heaven world, but the direct experience of spaciousness. And he was trained in Vipassana meditation. But the other 15 people in the room who were sitting in meditation with my teacher were all being flooded with, yes, spaciousness, but simultaneously light and brilliance and love and these flows of Shakti, these incredibly transformative energies. Because we all knew how to listen We all know how to be open in this way. But our good Buddhist friend who showed up, he was trained in a different way. He was trained to put his attention on the tip of his nose, and if he saw a thought, he was supposed to label it thinking. And so he was listening for thoughts. And when he saw one, he would say thinking to himself silently. And again, nothing wrong with his way of listening. The only thing that was wrong is he missed this huge transmission of grace, this huge transmission of love. We can all find ourselves in a dream state, even if we study spirituality. We can be in a dream state where we're so heavily focused on our practice that we don't know what's happening in the room. We miss out on the beauty and the grace that's flooding the room. And so this art of contemplation, it's a willingness to be open, to listen, to experience life directly, but not simply in a habitual egoic way. But in a way where our full body is open, our full energetic body, the totality of it is open. All seven chakra centers are open. We're open, yes, transcendent non-dual awakening. But beyond transcendent non-dual awakening, we're also open to embodied non-dual awakening. We're open to the experience of the heart. We're open to the experience of our indestructible nature. We're open to the experience of being flooded with grace and light and love. We're open to the experience of brilliance and truth. And so by open, I mean we are experiencing, actively experiencing the truth. Sometimes people think that to experience truth, you read philosophy or you read some airtight argument. That's not to actively experience truth. When you actively experience truth, you will feel a power in your body. You will feel a depth, a presence in your Hara chakra. It'll sound like a pristine temple bell that's arising from within you. It'll feel solid and pure and unmovable. And so to contemplate in this way, to inquire in this way, is to inquire with all seven chakra centers, to be open with all seven centers, to be open with the fullness of your energetic body. Because too often people contemplate in their mind and they inquire in their mind. And they're simply reasoning. And yes, reasoning is a step forward if we're in confusion. But there's a step beyond reasoning. There's a step beyond philosophy. Contemplation is the art of living the truth. Living it. It's a willingness to sit with a question. Not for 5 minutes or 30 seconds, but how about 5 years or 10? Well, I've asked this question since I was about 16 years old. What does it mean to be awake in the world? What does that mean? Am I willing to live this mystery? Am I willing to step into this flow of truth? Am I willing to look at this question, sit with this question from 1,000 different angles? If we ask a question like that, what does it mean to be awake in this world? Normally, where people go to, they go to a place where they feel good all the time. And why, yes, of course, this is a part of it. Feeling good is a part of being awake. But feeling good is a byproduct. If the point is to feel good, well, that just simply sounds like our egoic habit to seek pleasure and avoid pain at all cost. Oftentimes, to be awake in this world requires a courage and a willingness to love all the places we struggle, to love our enemies. Are people who piss us off. Probably many of us don't have too many enemies. The people who irritate us. Can we love them fully? How can I be this movement of love in the world? How does the truth want to show up through me? These are much more powerful questions than how can I feel better. For if any of us, if we truly contemplate what the spiritual journey is about, if we have any maturity, we realize it has nothing to do with us feeling better, and everything to do with us merging into the compassion, the love, the service, the truth, the movement of God. To truly be awake, we become a movement. A movement of love, a movement of truth. So oftentimes people think being awake is an experience. An experience we have. Well, if it's an experience, it can come and it can go. To truly be awake means to step into the flow of God's grace. And not step out. Can we step into this movement of love? This is the question I'm going to leave you all with tonight. So thank you all for sharing this wonderful evening with me, or morning, or whatever time of day it is. I thank you all for the donations that you offered last week's talk and I thank you in advance for tonight's talk. My heart is connected with your heart. I feel your love in me. I feel this deep connection with you all. Thank you so much for sharing this time with me. God bless you all. May you all have a wonderful night. Peace be with you.